Welcome to Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and I'm really excited about my guest today. Her name is Dr. Miriam Grossman, and she is a great friend of mine. Dr. Grossman is a child and adolescent psychiatrist. She used to work at UCLA and now is in private practice in New York. She is the author of two terrific books. One is called Unprotected, and the other book is You're Teaching My Child What? But before we jump into our interview, I'd like to share with you about an exciting opportunity that is only available this month. For the month of July, we've handpicked two resources to help you or someone you love raise a strong-willed child. For every donation we receive this month, we will say thank you by sending you Dr. Dobson's book, The New Strong-Willed Child, along with its corresponding DVD from our brand new Building a Family Legacy series. To stand with Family Talk on behalf of families, give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org. So let's get to the program. Here is my interview with Dr. Miriam Grossman on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Well, I am so excited to have a colleague on the line with me today, Dr. Miriam Grossman, and I have long admired your work, and I am just really thrilled to talk with you today. Thanks so much for being with me.
Oh, wow. Well, that's so lovely of you to say. Can I call you Meg? You'll call me
Yes,
Miriam?
You can. Yes, please.
Okay. Well, you know that I'm a giant fan of yours as well, so I just love what you do. I love your books. I love your message, and it's so encouraging to have you out there. There aren't that many of us who are standing up and talking about the kind of things that we're talking about.
Yeah. You wrote your first book, Unprotected, what year?
2006.
2006. And that work was prompted because you were working at that time at UCLA in the Student Health Services. And you say that you saw a lot of pain in the students, both psychologically and physically, because of promiscuity. Can you take us back to that time and
sure.
tell us what prompted you to be a crusader?
Yeah. Well, it was actually I was working in the student counseling center, not the student health center. And the only reason I bring that up, because we were two separate places, the only reason I bring that up is because it actually made a difference. It played a part in, let's say, the genesis of how I came to write the book Unprotected. What happened is that I had been working in student counseling for a number of years at UCLA when our records switched from, you know, hard handwritten copies to computerized
yes.
medical records. You know, this is way back, you know, 10 years, more than 10 years ago. You know, we used to have paper, actual paper that we wrote on. Remember that?
The paper was my friend, still is. Yeah.
Yeah. So we switched to doing our records on the computer. And as a result of that, the records of the Student Counseling Center and the Student Health Center were sort of combined, like we had access. Before this, we did not have easy access to the actual medical records of the students that were coming in to see us. Are you following me?
Yes.
So when I would have somebody on my, you know, in my appointment book, and I would interview them, do a psychiatric evaluation, I got a medical history, and I wouldn't necessarily call the student health center and say, you know, does this jive with what you have in your records?
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered when we were computerized and I would automatically check the medical records of people coming in to see me because I was interested. I mean, I have to know as a psychiatrist if this person's been ill, if they might have, you know, epilepsy, what medications they're on. And it was very convenient to have their medical records in front of me. But lo and behold, I discovered that many of them had sexually transmitted infections, perhaps had gone in for the morning after pill many times,
mm-hmm.
were getting tested frequently for either STDs or pregnancy, perhaps mm-hmm. they had a number of abortions. And although, you know, most students would tell me that on their own, but A surprising number would not.
That's right.
And so I suddenly had access to a lot of information in certain cases that I wouldn't have had before. And that's when I discovered that, you know, a lot of kids are coming in and they have had or they do currently have sexually transmitted infections that they do not always mention in a psychiatric interview.
Sure.
So I started to ask more questions and delve more deeply into the sexual histories of the kids that were coming in to see me. And I concluded that very often it was their choices in their sexual lives that contributed to their ending up in the chair right in front of me, contributed to perhaps some depression that they may have, some anxiety, distress, trouble sleeping, that all these things were quite often, more often than I had imagined, wrapped up in something to do with the choices that they made in that area.
Yeah. So you were beginning to see this connection between promiscuity and depression, anxiety, school issues, sleep issues. Were students surprised when you made that connection?
They wouldn't be surprised, to answer your question, because what I would often do is just begin, I would dig a little deeper than I think they may have done themselves. For example, you know, on more than just a few occasions, and I wrote about this in the book, a young woman might come in who complains of depression and crying spells and her grades have gone down, she can't concentrate, but she can't put her finger on what really happened.
Yes.
And only with, you know, further very directed questioning could we figure out that, you know what, it was just a few months ago that I met this guy and we started hooking up and, gee, I got attached to him. He became an important person to me, and that feeling was not reciprocated. The reason that I think, Meg, that girls are confused about this issue is that they've been led to believe, not just by the culture and movies and music, but also by the medical profession, actually,
yes,
and the mental health profession. They've been led to believe that there's such a thing as casual sexuality, you know, no consequences, use a condom, there won't be any consequences, you hook up, sleep with someone that you don't even know, and then, you know, walk away the next day, and it's just no big deal. People, especially young women, have been led to believe this, and so they think there's something wrong with them.
Yes.
If they react differently, if they are affected by the encounter.
Right. Or if they hurt. I found the same thing with teenage boys, as a matter of fact. And I know you do a lot of speaking to young people, and I have done it as well. But when I start talking about the connection between depression and sex with multiple partners, it's always the teenage boys, the junior and seniors in high school, that will come up to me at the end with their eyes wide open. A light bulb went off, and I get it. I get why I might be hurting, because I've had 10 partners in the last year and a half.
Well,
and our culture just won't allow that to happen. But you're absolutely right. And I really loved when you talk about how the medical profession, and I feel the medical profession, has really dropped the ball and let our patients down because we're not coming out and telling truthful messages. You know, physicians all across the country should be standing up and saying, let me tell you the dirtiest little big secret in America, and that is we have an epidemic of infections out here. And as a matter of fact, I think it's in one of your books, but you write about how one out of two young adults who are sexually active will get a sexually transmitted infection. Can you just give us some other numbers that you give in your book? Because I know a lot of our listening audience is not going to believe what you and I are talking about.
Well, they better believe it, because it's only, I'm afraid I don't see it getting much better soon. But
no,
the actual statistic for the STDs in young people ages, I believe, 15 to 24, something like that, is another young person in this country gets a sexually transmitted infection every 3.5 seconds.
Yeah.
I don't know what it if it turned. They, you know, the CDC came out. They said 1 in 4 girls had an STD, and that was some years ago. Now,
yes.
Most of those numbers, of course, are HPV, human papillomavirus, virus, and herpes. You know, we have the vaccination now against HPV. I don't know what your approach is toward that. We don't have any kind of vaccine or anything for herpes. But what I feel the medical profession does is, and certainly comprehensive sex educators, is they just whitewash what a devastating experience those infections can be. And, of course, this is something, you know, you have written so extensively mm-hmm. about your experience and describing your patients and your young girls and young, you know, guys coming in and how devastated they are. But it really needs to be underscored that it's not just a minor little bother in life.
No. It's an enormous problem, and it takes an enormous toll. And I think to be living in a culture that sells sex to our young people so aggressively, they use sex to sell all their products to our young people. And now we have a vaccine to, quote unquote, prevent some of them, which the vaccine, it does pretty well. But it, as you know, it doesn't begin to cover the number of HPV strains that we have out there. You wrote in You're Teaching My Child What? About sex education. Talk to us a little bit about what you see in sex education across the country and what needs to change.
I'm talking here about what's called comprehensive sexuality education. It's very deeply flawed. I've studied it to a great extent in tremendous detail. And to put it in one sentence, I would say that this sort of sex education is about sexual freedom and not sexual health.
Yes.
And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. It's basically foisting an ideology on young people in which sexual behavior from a young age is celebrated and it's considered a right, meaning that no one, your parents, your doctor, your church, no one can come along and say to you, you know, it's best to be self-disciplined and to wait until you're older. Sexuality education, as it stands now, teaches young people that only they know when is the right time to start mm-hmm. being sexual and that it is their right to express their sexuality. And as a pediatrician and adolescent, you know, doctor, you know that most teens feel that they're ready for just about anything.
Absolutely. And I sort of say my job is a little bit easier than yours because I can say to kids, look, if you start having sexual activity at 15, 16, 17, there's a high likelihood that you could have X, Y, and Z diseases in a year or two. But from your perspective as a psychiatrist, how do you talk to a teenager and say, from a psychiatric or psychological standpoint, I encourage you not to be sexually active because? What's that conversation you have?
Well, it's actually the first part of it might be the same as yours because I am a medical doctor, so I can still point that out, what the sexually transmitted infections are that they're likely to get, that, you know, I tell them that it's not a question of whether they will get an STI, it's which one.
Exactly.
You know, that's how common they are. So I might start with that, but then I'll elaborate on what effect those infections and the relationships can have on one's mental health, how the brain is not completely mature until adulthood, and how the brain is more likely, you know, to make decisions based on their urges at the moment instead of really thinking about the long-term consequences. And, you know, I find that what's most important, because I know that what I just said sort of sounds like preaching, but what's most important is that the patient in front of you, whatever age they are, can get that you really care.
Yes.
And that you're not just saying this because you're, you know, you might hold some religious views or even medically that you're just being like, you know, a policeman. It's not like that. It's just, I don't want to see this person come back in 6 months and, you know, have a new diagnosis because of some one-night thing that happened or, you know what I mean? I'll feel sad. It'll be sad for me, too.
Yes. Do your young adults listen to you when you talk that way face-to-face? I'm saying this because I really care. I don't want you to come back with depression or an infection in a year. Do you find that they're receptive to your message?
You know, there's all kinds of kids out there. I would say it goes from, at the best, people really thanking me to just the teenager that will politely listen and just, you don't know. You don't know if it's gone in or not. You mm-hmm. hope that it has. You know, you do the best you can. You don't have them in the office for that long. You don't know, you know, what life is going to hit them with and how they'll react. It's also very important for them to know that what I'm presenting is an ideal. And you can try and reach it. Many people, probably most people, just like the ideal of diet and exercise and all those other things.
Sure.
You know, it's something that as a doctor I feel obligated to tell people and encourage mm-hmm. them and tell them that they can do it. But hey, you know, if they don't, it's just, then you deal with things, you know, whatever the new reality is.
Right. Because a lot of times, even the patients that are coming into your office are patients who've done things that they didn't wish they might not have done, or clearly things haven't gone well for them and they want to change because something's wrong. And that's why they're coming into you.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Are you familiar with Dr. Nicolai? I remember he'd written many years ago about the development of a healthy sexuality in teenagers and said it really isn't fully developed until they're close to their 20s or their early 20s, very much like brain development, because the development of one's sexuality is very complicated. And I just wanted to hear your take on that, because a lot of times, you know, we hear that, well, if a 10-year-old comes in your class or a 13-year-old comes in your class and says, I'm gay or I'm straight or I'm bisexual or whatever, that we're to encourage that. And my response to that is, wait a minute, they don't know much about anything else in their life. Why should I take them at their word on this too? So what is your take on the development of sexuality in teenagers?
You know, I think that because the whole movement of this ideology of sexual freedom has been so pervasive and successful in our culture and in our field of medicine, I think that that's the only reason we're all so preoccupied with all this. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you look at child and adolescent development, there are tasks that at every stage children and adolescents face. And we are now putting, you know, due to this huge cultural, like, tsunami of preoccupation, grotesque preoccupation with sexuality and gender and all these things, we're putting that, like, so far ahead of everything else on the list. And it
yes.
shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be. Kids have to, you know, develop academically, do well in school, develop friendships, you know, deal with things in the family, develop as people, develop their skills, their morality, their intellectual life, their creative life. I mean, this is not at the top of the list.
No, and it's all driven by money. I mean, that's the only reason it's there, is because it makes a lot of money for a lot of people selling sex to our kids. You know, it's interesting because you and I have seen enormous cultural shifts in our years of practicing medicine. You know, there was a day when I was in medical school, boy, in the early 80s, where we weren't that concerned about a lot of sexually transmitted infections. I remember herpes kind of coming on the scene, but you and I didn't even know about HIV. Nobody had AIDS in the country.
Well, Yeah, that was in the early 80s was when I remember that well, because I was just out of medical school and I was in New York City. So there was, you know, it was a mysterious illness that suddenly a lot of that gay men, young gay men, were dying from. But you're right. You cannot even compare the 70s, let's say, when I'm assuming, like, I was in college in the 70s. Mm-hmm. No. Venereal disease, right?
It was called then.
No one knew anybody that, you know, that was like people that your friend, like prostitutes got. Sailors, you know.
Yeah, and sailors. But you're absolutely right. And the reason I say that is because a lot of young people today feel that this has always been this way. And I say, no, this is the consequence of fighting hard for sexual freedom. And I don't think it's a stretch to say, this is my personal opinion, but the whole LGBT movement and now this, you know, the focus on gender identity issues is really less about LGBT than sexual freedom. That this is just a piece of the puzzle, but I really feel that it's our obsession with sexuality, sexual activity, and sexual freedom. And if you take that away, a lot of this other stuff would just kind of fade, I think.
Well, yeah, if you look at, you know, the CDC has records and charts of the past, you know, decades of STDs, and of course we're seeing huge spikes, you know, related to the changes in our culture. And you don't have to be a big PhD in epidemiology to understand that, you know, as people began having more and more partners and concurrent partners, that this is the prime way for the organisms that cause these infections to flourish. It's pretty easy to figure that out, but what bothers me as well is that organizations like Planned Parenthood and other sex education sites, organizations, want to lead young people to believe that getting a sexually transmitted infection is really just part of becoming sexually active and growing up. And, you know, I think that is really outrageous.
It is. It's completely outrageous. It is. And what young people don't realize is that, A, having them or having one, even HPV, is accompanied with tremendous amount of shame, even though you are taught, in quotes, that having an STD, one or two or three, is just part of the game. Deep in their hearts, they know this is not the right way to go, that something is wrong here. Dr. Grossman, this half hour has gone by so quickly, and I thank you so much for being with me, and we have so much more to talk about. So can we reschedule and have you come back for another show? We could talk about all sorts of issues that are on parents' hearts.
Oh, absolutely. Please, let's do that. We have to do all we can for parents and families because they're, you know, as you know, they're up against, it's uphill. It's not an easy time now.
You know, and every parent out there is concerned about how to handle their children in a, you know, world that's, they're just getting bombarded with sexual messages, and it's frightening their parents. And I don't want parents to be afraid, but I think there's a lot they can do. So let's continue the crusade. Thank you, my friend. You are a warrior, and I'm so admire you. So keep up the good fight.
Thank you. I'm just going to throw this in because I didn't say it before, but I want to encourage parents to get educated. And I have loads of information on my website, which is MiriamGrossmanMD.com. I have a blog, lots of good stuff on there, stuff about sexuality education, why it's dangerous, why it's filled with misinformation, and just things that every parent needs to know.
You're absolutely right. That's MiriamGrossmanMD.com. Fabulous blogs, a lot of education. So everybody needs to go there and check it out. So
okay.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You're welcome. You too. Bye.
Bye. And before we go today, I want to remind you of the special offer I mentioned at the top of the program.
For the month of July, we've handpicked two resources to help you or someone you love raise a strong-willed child. For every donation we receive this month, we'll say thank you by sending you Dr. Dobson's book, The New Strong-Willed Child, along with its corresponding DVD from our brand new Building a Family Legacy series. To stand with Family Talk on behalf of families, please give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org. Coming up next time, we'll enjoy a classic interview with Larry Burkett about God's view of money right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.